the corruption comes in through the election system. So representatives don't need to be elected. They could be randomly selected by what I call an intelligent filtration process. And anybody can opt in to be a representative. And I suggest, for example, on your tax return, you saw this bill that the Democrats dumped on Congress at the last minute for, you know, what, it was 1,500 pages, and they gave the representatives 24 hours to vote on it. I mean, that's just criminal.
Today, we are joined by Joseph Jenkins, an award-winning self-published author. He's here to discuss his latest book, Direct Democracy and the Curse of the Boiling Frogs. This book is a launchpad for the recently formed True Representation Movement. Joseph makes the case for a radical change and presents a bold vision to reform the United States into a real democracy, from making Congress be selected by a lottery to having Americans vote directly on legislation. You'll learn solutions to our government you won't hear on the mainstream media. First off, why did you decide to write the book? Because it was quite a departure from your previous books, like on human manure and composting. So this was kind of out of left field. Was it living through 2020 and you got mad at the government, or was it watching what happened to Rachel? I mean, what made you go this direction?
Well, it was kind of a combination of those things. Rachel was my office manager and sales manager. She ended up, you know, moving in with me. She's a J6, January 6th defendant. And she has 8 kids, you know, single mother, but only 3 of them are younger. The 5 are older. All of a sudden she, you know, Judge Royce Lamberth throws her in prison for 5 years on top of, 3 years of house arrest for a misdemeanor. And, all of a sudden, the house was empty. This house, I have an office in the house, and I actually have an office building up the hill here. That's where Rachel was working until Judge Lamberth went and let her out of the house. So all of a sudden the house was empty. Her son took over her job. And so I had private time to, I could finally start working on this book. And, I've been thinking about it for about 10 years. So it's not something all of a sudden that came up. It's just that the opportunity came up for me to sit down and focus on it for 9 months. I had worked on it for, pecked at it a little bit off and on for a few months, and then when she disappeared and everybody was gone, the house is empty, I just decided I'm going to go ahead and write it, and I did. It took me about a year pen to paper, and about 10 years of what I call the gestation period. You know, if you're a writer and you write books, there's a gestation period. It's like giving birth, and you know, then you go from the gestation period into labor, that's the pen on paper, and then a book comes out of it. Well, that's what this book is, this Direct Democracy book, which I just published it this fall. And one of the things that I felt there was some urgency in getting it into print was the COVID, the biggest chapter in the book is called the Scamdemic. And I don't know if you've noticed, but it's been swept under the rug. You know, all of a sudden, it never happened. You know, nobody talks about it. We just had a presidential election cycle. They didn't talk about it. All the businesses that went bankrupt, all the people who were fired from their jobs, all the people who got forced drug injections, on and on and on. You know, the cancellation of our constitutional rights, freedom of assembly, freedom of religion, freedom of speech, all the censorship. All of a sudden, that never happened. Well, I've been around. When you hit your 70s, you start to realize most people are younger than you are, you know. And I've been watching this since I was a kid, this phenomenon. It's a recurring phenomenon where the people who control the government conjure up a mass hysteria, and they use it as a means to drain the national treasury. And I first became, you know, aware of that when I was 18 during the Vietnam War. They were shipping the 18-year-olds off to fight the war. And the mass hysteria was the commies are coming, you know, the Reds, there's going to be a red wave, or it's going to take over, we're all going to die. Anyway, this has never stopped. It's still happening today. And the younger people, the younger generations, they don't know that. They don't know that it's over and over and over and over again. Another war, another threat. You know, if it's not commies, it's ISIS, or it's terrorists, or it's Manuel Noriega, or, you know, Saddam Hussein, or, you know, just one after the other. And the people who succumb to this influence are people who are glued to their televisions, which I call brainwashing machines. And I say that with some authority because I haven't watched commercial television since 1970. So 54 years. Well, when I was 18, actually, I moved out of my parents' home. I was in college, and not by choice, but I just never had use for TV after that. I mean, you know, I mean, you can use a television monitor and watch and stream stuff, and, you know, watch, you know, videos and stuff like that. But commercial TV is where all the propaganda and influencing takes place, most of it. So I've seen the subtitle of the book is The Curse of the Boiled Frogs. And I have seen this happen over these last 54 years, how people just lose their ability to think for themselves and don't realize it. They don't realize what's happening to them. It's the whole boiled frog analogy where, you know, you put a frog in water and you turn the heat on low, and as it slowly heats up, the frog doesn't realize it's getting cooked until it's too late. That's the curse of the boiled frogs. It's the same thing that happens with the media. Whereas if you throw a frog in hot water, it jumps out or tries to. So I've seen this happen, and I realize that people don't understand for example, the invasion of Iraq. The idea, it's the idea that we would spend $4 trillion to invade and slaughter a million people in another country across the ocean for something they didn't do. We blame 9/11 on the Iraqis and the Afghans. Those people, they probably didn't even know where the World Trade Center was, you know, certainly in Afghan. But we, you know, the G.W. Bush administration went over there. And basically, that was a Republican thing, and attacked the Iraqis and slaughtered, you know, dropped more bombs on Iraq than they dropped in World War II. These are statistical facts. This last mass, and the people fell for it. America, we paid for it. This is what the book Direct Democracy gets down to, is we're doing it. We, the American taxpayer, we pay for these crimes against humanity, and we conduct them on behalf of the government. The government orders it, makes it happen. People behind the government, I should say. And we end up doing it. So Americans are responsible for, and I go all the way back to the Korean War. I start with the Korean War in the book. Nobody knows anything about the Korean War. I ask you, frankly, you probably don't know anything about the Korean War, maybe even the Vietnamese War, the Vietnam War. Most people don't. I came of age during Vietnam, and if you're not my age, you're probably too young to know what was going on. So I decided to put pen to paper, write it down for my grandchildren. So the whole time I'm writing this book, I'm thinking about my grandson, explaining to him, here's your granddad telling you what he's learned in 72 years and what he thinks you should know. Because this stuff is not going to stop happening unless we stop it. So the question is, how do we stop it? How do we take control of our government?
What do you think the next scamdemic is going to be to try to take more liberties? Do you think it's going to be a pandemic 2.0? Some people think it's going to be some sort of staged alien invasion. Do you have any sort of idea of what you might think it might be? Because they're going to do something. They've not done with us.
They're trying hard for World War III. And if the puppets, Biden and would have been Kamala, I guess, had gotten back in there, we would have had full scale war with Russia. I'm sure. People make a lot of money off of war. We don't. We spend the money. It's our money that they're spending. And do they ever ask you or me if we want that?
No, never.
Do they ever ask you or me if we want anything? Anything, any legislation? Do they ever ask us, we the people? Do the people in Congress or any legislative body canvass their constituents and ask them for their vote? No, they never do. They get elected, so-called, into office, and then our votes are as I point out in the book, when we vote for a representative, we're not exercising our right to vote. We're sacrificing our right to vote. In direct democracy, we vote. We the people vote on legislation. It's an alien thought because it's never been something that we could do until now with the technology that we have. Never in the history of humanity has it been possible for the registered voters to vote directly on legislation until now. Now we could set it up easily so that every single registered voter has the opportunity to cast a vote on legislation. It's like, for example, now, Trump's in there. He wants to, appoint certain people to certain positions in his administration. The Senate and the Senate and the House of Representatives, they can block that. They can block those. Why? What about us? What about we the people? Where's our voice in this? Liz Cheney Liz Cheney's a perfect example. I use her in my book. She represented Wyoming. Well, she was supposed to represent Wyoming, but she didn't. She got into office and she just basically said to the people that 70% of the people in Wyoming who voted for Trump, I don't care about you. I'm only going to represent the 30% who hate Trump. So, this is not anything close to democracy. Why don't we cast our vote on Trump's choices for his cabinet? Why don't we the people? I mean, the government's here to serve us. We created the government. Our founding fathers created the government as a tool to protect our rights and to provide a service to keep the order, et cetera, et cetera. We control the government. At least we're supposed to. Right now, the government's controlling us, as everybody saw during the scandemic. So here we are. We're kind of at a crossroads here. We're going to keep going down the wrong direction until we have imagine World War III. The United States has 6,000 nuclear warheads. Russia has 6,000 nuclear warheads. And, once those nuclear warheads start going off, it's a slippery slope. They can all be, you know, fired in a matter of, you know, a day or two. And then hundreds of millions of people would die, probably billions. And who would benefit from that? Well, not you, not me, not we paid for those weapons. The military is there to serve us, the people. If they pull off World War III, a handful of billionaires who control the government, they're going to benefit. They're going to get rid of the as many of the population as they possibly can. They're not the smartest people in the room, although they think they are. So I'm suggesting that we start thinking about direct democracy. That's what the book is about. And the reason why is, as I summarized very briefly here, that we need to take control of our government. There are, for example, in the United States, 162 million registered voters. Now, I've been involved in nonprofits for 50 years, and you'll find that most people don't want to get engaged in the decision-making process. That's just a fact. You know, when I say everybody should be voting on legislation, well, everybody should have the right to exercise that vote. And only, in my estimation, only about 15% of the people, of the registered voters, are going to care enough to get involved. So if 15% of 162 million registered voters got engaged in the legislative process, that's 23 million people. Right now in Congress, we have 535 people making decisions for everybody else. If we could engage the electorate, the constituency, we can have potentially 20 million people making the decisions, not just, when I say 530, half are, you know, roughly half are Democrats, half are Republicans. So it's totally divided. When the population is voting, the party has nothing to do with it. They're citizens voting, presumably, for their best interests. And so ask them if they want to send $300 billion to Ukraine or spend it on cleaning up the inner cities. You know, ask the people what kind of legislation we want.
Be an entirely different country.
We should be able to craft legislation. We should be able to amend legislation. We should be able to vote on legislation. And we shouldn't be having to ask the government for permission. So the whole direct democracy thing is actually a movement. A movement that's ironically, I was surprised. As soon as this book came out, a fellow in Washington, D.C., Ahmed Bouzid, he also wrote a book called The True Representation Model, or True Representation Movement, which is the same thing, that public representatives only vote based on the will of their constituents. You see?
Let's dive into that just a little bit. You mentioned how we would, in the book, you talk about how we would get our elected representatives. I'd never really heard that idea before about a lottery. So you want to explain that to the listeners? And then also, did you come up with that, or is that something that's kind of been floating around? And I've never read that anywhere before, so it was really a new concept for me.
Right. Well, when I floated that, I mean, to me, it makes perfect sense. And it's not, you don't have to be a genius to figure it out. But when I started floating this idea around 7-8 years ago, it caught the interest. People said, well, geez, why don't we do this? And the idea is, if we're voting on legislation, directly. Our representatives only have one vote, like we do. So Liz Cheney would have one vote. The constituency of Wyoming would be voting. And so what's going to happen there? 70% are going to vote one way and overrule whatever she decides to vote because she's only voting for herself. So then the representatives become a civil servant. They lose their power to become corrupted by the wealthy elites that control Congress now, because mostly Congress is a den of thieves. Our money, our tax money, that they're milking us like goats. Our tax money is just look at the national debt. You know, it's when I started writing this last fall, this book, Direct Democracy, our national debt was $34 trillion. As I wrote it, the national debt rose to $35 trillion. So I had to change it in the book. It's already $36 trillion. Where's all that money going? It's our money. You know, it's our money disappearing. And it's been doing that year after year after year after year. And these people in Congress, they're the ones making sure that money goes into somebody else's pockets and doesn't serve our interests. That's why we have to get rid of this. So the corruption comes in through the election system. So representatives don't need to be elected. They could be randomly selected by what I call an intelligent filtration process. And anybody can opt in to be a representative. So, for example, you don't have to be a Kennedy or a Bush or, you know, a Clinton or something like that, or some kind of political family. Anybody should be able to opt in. And I suggest, for example, on your tax return, you check off a box saying that you want to opt in to be a representative. Representatives then would be selected based on a number, Social Security number or something like that. There'd be an initial lottery where an initial group would be selected. You'd be notified. This is totally voluntary. You're not forced to it like jury duty. And then you have an option to opt out, which of course people would when they realize it's actually going to happen. And then after people opt out, there's a second lottery to reduce the numbers further, because we only need, say, for example, in federal government, we only need 535 or whatever it is. And so at that point, when the numbers are down to, 5,000 or something like that, then the remaining candidates have to be tested. It's ridiculous to think you'd have somebody in government who has no background in government, no knowledge about government. They don't even know the difference between the three branches of government. You know, who knows? Maybe they can't even speak English, you know? So there has to be a filtration process, an intelligent filtration process, that in the end, we have true representatives who represent their constituency, and their only job, well, not their only job, they have a lot of jobs as a representative, but their primary job is to canvass their constituents for every vote on every piece of legislation, and to give their constituents, meaning us, we the people, the taxpayers, the registered voters, giving the constituents the opportunity to submit amendments to legislation. It's just mind-boggling to me that people don't see what's going on here. You saw this bill that the Democrats dumped on Congress at the last minute, it was 1,500 pages, and they gave the representatives 24 hours to vote on it. I mean, that's just criminal. That is criminal. They were trying to steal billions more dollars at the last minute before there's a change in, you know, in the political structure. And that hasn't changed. It's they just voted for another, what, billion and a half to ship off to Ukraine, which is just a money laundering operation. So they're stealing our money. They're stealing our money right in front of our faces, folks. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but that's what's happening. We have a $36 trillion. The interest on our debt is $1 trillion a year. Just the interest. That's $1,000 billion a year. We're paying, you and me, and everybody listening or watching to this. You're paying for that. Are they asking you, these representatives, if that's how you want your money used? No, they're not. They never will. They have a nice cushy little system going where they can steal as much as they want, and they don't want anybody in there upsetting their apple cart. So here's the strategy right now. The True Representation Movement. You can find it online. Ahmed Bouzid, he's a tech whiz. So we need to plug in our technological capabilities now to enable citizens to vote directly in legislation, because that's how we're going to do it. So right now we're stuck with the representative system where we have to elect our representatives. So eventually we'll evolve beyond that, I think. But the strategy right now is to get people on board who are behind this this revolutionary idea to be candidates for to be representatives. So we would elect them, you know, in your constituency, wherever that happens to be. You would elect representatives who agree that they will not vote on the matters at hand. They will canvass their constituents, and that vote is what they will carry forward. So, for example, you're going to be a candidate, and you're being interviewed, the media is interviewing you, and they're saying, "Well, what's your position on abortion, or what's your position on this or that?" And your answer is, "Who cares? I'm not making the decisions. I have one vote like everybody else. Ask my constituents, ask the people, you know, the taxpayers who I represent, ask them what their position is." And that's what matters. That's what's important. So that's where we are. It's a very fledgling, just getting off the ground. Fledgling political movement nobody's heard about, but thanks to people like you, we're able to get the word out.
It seems like people would be voting a lot if it's on every piece of legislation. Is that kind of the beauty behind it? It might just force government to be smaller because people will have better things to do than go vote on bills all the time.
Well, I don't, you know, there are a lot of knee-jerk reactions to this idea. And frankly, that's one of them. That, I mean, what do you think they're doing in Congress, spending all the time voting on stuff? They're spending all their time raising money from rich donors for re-election. So if we, the people, could propose and pass legislation, imagine what we could do. To give you one example, we can legislate that all bills have to be single issue bills. You can't put 100 things in a bill, you know, stuff it with pork barrel bills, they call them, and then expect anybody to vote on them. Secondly, the bills should be limited in size. They can't be 1,500 pages. They have to be something that's easily readable in common language. They can't be legalese from beginning to end. That would make it very easy for citizens to be able to review legislation and also to be able to amend it. Now, we have, AI, whereby right now you can ask AI to, like ChatGPT or something like that, to summarize a current bill. And this is what the TRM, True Representation Movement, people are working on right now, is sending out by text links to read summaries of bills that are pending and then to vote on them. So, let's face it, if you had to read a 1,500-page bill, nobody's going to do that. No citizen's going to do that. Those should be outlawed. They're there to hide the fact that they're stealing money from us. They stuff all these things in those bills and dole out all this money to special interests, and we end up paying for it. So the fact of the matter is, we have to gain control of our government. We have to reform it into a system or a manner that is workable for the citizens. And we don't want to keep doing what they're doing now. Now, like I said earlier, most people aren't really going to do anything. There's only going to be maybe 15%. That's my estimated number. But once people realize their vote actually counts, that number will increase. You know, it's not like every day there's more new legislation popping up in your constituency, you know, like in Ohio, central Ohio, something like that. Your county, you know, your locality, your borough, all of these things could be operated in a direct democracy manner. So, for example, you know, the borough or the county, whoever wants to pass some new law, well, they have to run it by the people first. Instead, special interest or big business steps in and takes over and pushes it through because it benefits them, even though it may hurt the general population. And that's not democracy. We've never had democracy in this country. You always hear on TV, protect our democracy. They're gonna, Trump or whoever is going to destroy our democracy. We don't have a democracy. You know, if you stop for a second and think about it, in 1776, the late 1700s, when the Bill of Rights and the Constitution and all that, Declaration of Independence, one out of every six people who lived in America was a slave. So, and women weren't allowed to vote. So there's no way you could have a democracy under those circumstances. That's why they set up a constitutional republic. Well, that's been going on for 250 years. We can see it's turning into a train wreck, and we've got to regain control of the government. We can now have a direct democracy, a true democracy, because we don't have a large slave population. You know, women in the United States got the right to vote after women in the Soviet Union. Women in the Soviet Union, females in the Soviet Union had the right to vote before they did in the free world, so to speak. these aren't things taught in the government schools. They should be, but they're not. So,
I guess, what would you say to critics who would see this concept of direct democracy and say, that would lead to tyranny of the majority. You know, there's a reason the founders didn't want us to have a democracy. They thought it would lead to a demagogue taking power, or just a bunch of people saying, well, if I only have to get 51%, you know, it's direct to what the people want. A lot of horrible things could happen. What would be your response to that criticism?
Well, right. They float that out there all the time. Mob rule. It's going to be mob rule. Well, first off, the founders didn't want democracy because, 16% of the population were slaves. And women, weren't allowed to vote anyway. So that's why they didn't want it. It would have been, imagine if you were a slave owner and you had a lot of slaves and they all of a sudden had the right to vote. That to them would have been mob rule. But we don't live like that today. That was 250 years ago. And secondly, look around. Look around at the people in the United States. Is that a mob? Are they just a bunch of, dirty animals, living in filth and don't have the ability to make a decent decision? That's the implication. Everybody has some capability of making good decisions, especially when it's in their best interest, which means we all have the same basic values: family, health, our lives, our property, our homes, our businesses. And given the opportunity, I think the average person is going to vote based on those values. Now, the issue of democracy is the other point I need to make here is I'm suggesting that we look at this idea in order to start the conversations. So I'm not suggesting I have the answers. I'm planting a seed here, and everybody should have the opportunity to react. We should all have the opportunity to discuss this. So your point of the mob, well, you didn't say mob, I said mob, but that's basically, let's talk about it. Let's discuss that. Let's all start this conversation and decide if this can work or not. I use the Wright brothers as an analogy. People thought they were crazy. the Wright brothers were. It was early 1900, like 1905, when they flew their contraption in Kitty Hawk. But they weren't government people. They weren't academics. They weren't billionaires. They had a bicycle shop, two brothers. Never married, never went to college. But they had an idea, and people thought at first that they were crazy. Humans can't fly. Even the experts told them it's impossible. But they started, they poked around, they experimented, they were clever, they can make things, they were making bicycles, so they could make a bicycle with wings on it, basically. And sure enough, they got the thing to fly. That was 1905, something like that. Well, it was only 60 years after that that we had spaceships going to the moon. So at first you have this pushback, oh, it can't happen, it's crazy, it won't work. And then when people realize, start thinking about it, start looking at the possibilities, we humans were the creator species. We can make things happen. And we can create a government that works for us, that serves us. We can do it. I know we can do it. So that's the gist of Direct Democracy, the book. People don't need to read the book, they can just talk about it themselves and think about it. It makes perfect sense when you stop and think about it. How do we implement it? Where do we start? Well, that's where we're at now. We're starting through this true representation movement. We're looking for candidates to run for office.
Do you think that this type of direct democracy plan would ever replace what we have? Because obviously Congress that we have now would have to approve this method of selecting new representatives, and the plan you lay out, it's kind of like asking Congress to eliminate themselves and do it differently. Like they get to vote on their own raises and things like that. So it's just the beast keep feeding itself. Do you think this would ever happen, or it's going to lead to some sort of revolt of the people before that happens?
No, it's not going to be any, there's no violence needed. We don't need their permission. As I said, the strategy at this point is to run candidates for legislative office who are on board with true representation. And as time passes and we demonstrate that this works, more and more candidates will be in office who are supportive of direct democracy.
Okay, so just kind of get them in there playing by the handbook of direct democracy, even though they're still kind of playing in the game of regular constitutional republic. Right. Okay.
Right. It's an organic growth that I, as I see it. And in my book here, Direct Democracy, I allude to a lot, the communist revolution and this, particularly the Communist Manifesto, which is one of the things that influenced me in this book, in writing this book. The Communist Manifesto, 1984, by George Orwell, Klaus Schwab's Great Reset. These things are all related. And here's the thing about the Communist Manifesto, which is never discussed. You don't study it in school. Nobody really knows what it's all about. And neither did I, really. I read the book. I was surprised at how boring it was. But it was published in 1848 by Karl Marx, Friedrich Engels. And there, one of the basic foundations of communism was the abolition of private property. No private property. Now, why would they do this? Well, they had the same problem then that we've had that goes back eons, which is a handful of very super wealthy people control everybody else. And the communists were trying to figure out a solution, and their solution was eliminate all private property. That way there will be no rich people. Well, obviously that's a flawed approach, but it resonated with a lot of people, billions of people. And after Marx and Engels published the Communist Manifesto, it took almost three generations before the communist revolution occurred, forming the Soviet Union. So this is before the internet and before, email and the type of media we have today. The point being that when an idea resonates with the general population, it will catch on. How quickly and how accurately, how appropriately, is up to us. In the case of the communist revolution, one of the primary principles was, and I explain all this in the book, abolition of private property, which is, that's never going to work. People are never going to agree to that. So, and in fact, China, which is probably the largest communist nation in the world, population wise, they have 6.2 million people who are millionaires in China, communist China. So what happened to the, you know, abolishing private property? It's you know, it's not working. It never will work. It's against human nature. What I'm proposing isn't communism. What I'm proposing is democracy, something that we've never had. Democracy isn't something we have to kill people for. We don't have to bomb anybody. We don't have to invade anybody. It has nothing to do with right or left or conservative or liberal or any of these dichotomies that they use to separate us. Democracy, true democracy, is an attribute of society that affects equally anybody anywhere in the world. It's not just an American thing. We all have the same basic foundational principles and values, and we always will as human beings. Our families, our children, our property, our businesses, our homes. And we need to make sure those things are protected. Our lives, our freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, freedom of religion. Every time there was a revolution in history, the first thing that they did was come up with a Bill of Rights, because they were tired of tyranny. They're tired of a small number of people controlling everybody. And the French Revolution, the American Revolution, I list them in the book, the different bills of rights or list of rights and what the things that we can all agree on, we can all agree to. We have freedom of speech is a right, but the government steps in and says, we're taking that away from you. Well, you can't take a right from somebody. You can take a privilege, but not a right. And during the COVID era, they just trampled all over the Bill of Rights, all over the world. You know, it was a worldwide conspiracy. I shake my head at how easily they've managed to scare people into doing what they wanted them to do. But and then swept everything under the rug. And I preserved it in this book as much as I could, for so people in the future can read what actually was going on here. So the gist of, you know, it was a long way of me saying this thing is going to grow. I have no doubt that this idea of direct democracy or true representation is going to grow. I think it's going to be a tide that cannot be stopped. And we're right at the beginning of it on the ground floor. And we need to, start talking about it. If it's wrong, why is it wrong? If it's not going to work, why isn't it going to work? Is it a foolish idea? What makes it foolish? Those are the things we need to be discussing. We need to look at this. Makes perfect sense and it's doable, and figure out how to make it work before it's too late.
If I can, I want to play devil's advocate one last time here, and then we can kind of move on to another part of the book. But I know you say you just starting a conversation, getting discussion, kind of dropping a seed in people's heads. I think my problem, not problem, but my concern with it, I love the fact of people having more voice in government and getting what they want. But when I see the IRS, you know, your tax filings, and that's where you check off if you want to be considered to be representative. I didn't like what I saw happen with the 2020 election. And I can't imagine giving all that power to the IRS. I think the IRS is pretty evil. I don't trust them to take my tax filing and my check mark and organize that appropriately. I could see a lot of corruption take place, even though it would be automatically filtered. I could see where the government might look for people they could blackmail because they have your financial information in front of them, or maybe just manipulate it. And we think that it's automatically filtered, but really they're handpicking their goons. And I think most MAGA people, conservatives, just hate the IRS almost from birth. So do you think that maybe it should be shifted to some other or agency or department. That's the part that kind of was like, oh, the IRS, I want them abolished. You know, you kind of get where I'm going.
Right. Well, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's probably, well, between the mob rule and not trusting technology, really. I mean, that's what it boils down to. Those are the two basic things that people, that pop into people's minds. You know, everything can be hacked. Everything, you know, we saw in 2020, you know, with the voting machines and the drop boxes and all that, the corruption, it was just disgusting. How do we make it work? And the way I see it is, you know, we use our credit cards online. We do our banking online. We trade stocks online. We have an online Social Security account. Everybody has an online Social Security account. You can get into it, and it shows all your income and all your payments that you made. There's no reason we can't vote under the same type of security, you know, through the layers of security that are involved. And, you know, you got credentials, you got a password, you got a username, you got a one-time password every time you try to log in. Right now, that's the type of security we have using technology. And I think that we can do the same thing with our with a direct democracy concept. Plus, if the IRS is a problem or anything like that, there's no reason we can't craft legislation to try to solve those problems. So we have to start somewhere. This is where we're at. It's possible with the technology we have to move forward with this. Yes, there are going to be all kinds of roadblocks thrown in front of us by the people who are going to lose their power. In the media. The media will make fun of this. They'll call it communism or whatever, you know. But we, the people, have to get control of our government. We have to be able to control our own, protect our own interests. And the Constitution provides for that. If you know, I spell it out in the book. And if we don't do it, it's not going to happen. I can tell you that right now. And it doesn't matter if you're Republican or Democrat or anything, male or female, black or white, the skin colors, the genders, all that, none of that is relevant. What matters is we're all human beings. We're all part of the same species worldwide. And we have to coalesce into some manner where we can control our governments rather than our governments controlling us. So that's what we're looking at, and I you're right. Your questions are perfect, and I encourage people to be devil's advocate, to throw everything at it, everything you can think of to try to make it sound like it won't work, and then step back. Think about it. What is the solution? This is the problem. What's the solution? Because when we put our heads together and cooperate, it's amazing what we are able to achieve. And not just in technology, not just in medicine, not just in transportation, you know, not just in computers and everything else, but in government. We have to start realizing government has to evolve. We can't just leave it go the way it is. Look at it. It's a mess. It's a train wreck. Something has to change. So.
Wanted to ask you, you can kind of explain it in a little bit more detail, but you talk about how we would do the budget in direct democracy, where people would like rank agencies 1 through 10. Would that just be averaged out then? So like everybody's suggestion for military and then just average it?
Well, that's...
It was super simple, and I don't know if you could expand on it maybe a little bit more. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I'm throwing out some ideas people really never thought about. Like, right now, the Congress, this is federal level, but it could be any level, decides where the money goes. And a lot of it just disappears. You know, if we talk federal level, the military can account for trillions of dollars. Well, I suspect that all that money is going into pockets somewhere. So the people that never have a choice, you know, should we spend all this money on the military? And how about cleaning up the cities? You know, how much money should we spend on this or spend on that? We don't have a choice. We don't have a say. There's nobody cares what the people think. So there's got to be a way that the people can rank in some manner their preferred expenditures, governmental expenditures, you know, transportation, environment, military, infrastructure, retirement plans, medical costs, you know, different types of insurance for the society, rather than have a handful of people making those decisions who are getting kickbacks or are being influenced by big business or the medical industrial complex or the military industrial complex or what have you. So my comments in the book are we should have some controllable interest in how our money is spent. And I gave an example of the top 10 categories of expenditures in the government. How would we rank them 1 to 10 if we had the choice? And if we could all do that, then I think we would see how people want their money spent, and that's important. That we have that input or even that control of the budget.
Do you think Americans are smart enough? I know that sounds like an awful question, but to have that type of level of input on, like, this is what I think we should spend. I mean, most Americans don't even have $500 in savings. You know, the statistics are pretty wild about how careless Americans are.
Yeah.
Do you think most could even have I don't want to say educated, but just like common sense understanding of how to even approach budgeting when they can't normally do it for themselves?
That's a perfect question. And because these are the same questions everybody asks.
Okay. Are they? Okay. Because I read it and I'm like, I don't know if nobody's thought of them or everybody's thought of them, but it's what popped in my head.
Yeah. They're the same questions everybody asks. And I try to address them not in depth, but I mentioned in the book, I say, look, next time you're out in public on a bus, on a train, or in the office or wherever, walking down the street, pay attention to your community members. Pay attention to the people pumping your gas or the lady who's cleaning your house. do you really think that they're not capable of making an intelligent decision about things that are important in their lives? We didn't build this nation on the backs of stupid people. Americans are smart. There's a lot of smart people. There's a lot of hardworking, smart people in the United States and in the whole world. I mean, you'd be surprised. You go to Africa or someplace, people living in huts, they're not stupid. That's just, they're stuck with that reality, but they're still smart. I've been to 64 countries around the world. I've seen a lot of stuff. And the human being is a smart animal. And there are dumb, I think I think about this, you know, pretty frequently. Yeah, there are a lot of dumb people, but they're not the majority. They're not the majority. We're the majority. So, and then again, we get back to given the option, how many people are going to get plugged in and get involved in controlling the legislation? Well, it's not going to be everybody. And probably the dumb ones are the ones who aren't going to be involved. So you have 15%, you still have 85% that aren't really doing anything. So I don't think that's really an issue at all. What I'm suggesting, what we need, and if anybody's watching or listening here, what we need is an enlightened community. It doesn't have to be the whole country and the federal government. It could be a local city council or something like that, where the representatives adopt a true representation model. So in this community, could be in California, could be in Maine, could be anywhere, could be Texas. No decisions are made by the council or whatever the governing body is until their constituency is canvassed and the decision is made according to the will of their constituency. This would be a working model. We need some working models to prove or disprove the theory that this will work. So, and I think it's inevitable. I think it's going to happen that we're going to have direct democracy or true representation groups who may be the first in the world who help spark this movement that I believe will spread eventually worldwide.
Have you thought about running for office to implement this, or not interested?
Apparently, no. I'm not really interested, but apparently I will be. Because Ahmed, the fellow who's organizing this, he asked me if I would be a candidate, and I said, well, don't really have time right now. I manage five businesses, and but I would, if nothing else, just to be able to publicly speak about this whole concept. So he says, okay. He picked out I'm in Pennsylvania. He picked out a district in Pennsylvania, and he said, we're going to run you in that district in 2026. So what we're looking for are people who will run in 2026, the 2026 election cycle, as true representation candidates, so that if they're elected, they will make decisions based on their constituents being canvassed in some secure manner, so that the constituents are making the decisions. And we may, you know, we probably won't get elected, but we'll get the word out, and it's the beginning. You got to start somewhere.
If somebody's listening to this or watching this later and they want to go, oh, I want to run for office and do this, would they just contact you or that Ahmed, or do y'all have a website up and running yet? Or okay.
So it's I don't know if you know Linktree, linktr.ee/truerepmovement, TRUERP movement. And that'll take you to the Linktree, which has all the links to including videos and, you know, introduction videos and that sort of thing. So that's also, I have that link on my my e-commerce site where I have my book. If anybody's looking at that book, the link is there. So I'm, you know, I should have, well, that's right now. It's the best. I just put that link up yesterday.
Oh, okay. It's fresh.
Yeah. This is all just happening. It's brand new.
Okay. So ground level, people want to get involved, be from the very beginning.
Yeah, Right in, we're at the baby steps, right at the very beginning. So okay. If you're getting involved now, you're the very first people
okay.
to be getting involved in this true representation, direct democracy concept.
Cool. I wanted to bring up one more thing in the book. You talked about Doctor of Health, and that was another idea I don't think I've heard before. It seems like something that RFK might say, talking about the MAHA movement. There's been this renaissance of people caring about their health after COVID. Yep. And it seems like right up a lot of people's alley. Would you kind of explain how that would work? And then I guess my question on top of that would be, would this just be controlled by the government? Or would it, you think this Doctor of Health should just be some sort of like outside organization set up? Because I'm a little leery of, even if it's good health advice coming from the government. So kind of explain it, and then maybe that small criticism, where that places.
Yeah, I throw some things in there in the latter part of the book that I think people need to think about, that with our current government, we're not going to be exposed to. And the Doctors of Health is one of them, as opposed to Doctors of Medicine. Medicine is one thing, health is another. Healthcare is free. You know, we have these euphemisms. Medical care is called healthcare, but in fact, medical care is expensive. Healthcare is free. It's free to choose what you eat. It's free to take a hot bath and a nap when you need it, and you know, fresh air, clean living, stay away from bad habits and junk food and you know, all that stuff. That doesn't cost anything. Exercise is free. You know, I mean, you can be healthy. It doesn't cost you a nickel. It's medical care that's going to bankrupt you. So everything is focused on, in our country, on medical care and not enough on health. And so here comes Robert Kennedy Jr. Great. It's starting. He's pointing out all the crap in our foods, and the people eat this stuff every day, and they don't understand sugar's terrible. It's I mean, when I say sugar, I mean sucrose. I mean sucrose and high fructose corn syrup. They're addictive, and people don't realize they're addicted to them, and then they don't understand why they can't control their body weight and things like that. Why they're getting all the diseases associated with those things. there's some other touchy issues that I talk about in the book, because people can't talk about like vaccines. You can't mention vaccines because you're going to get censored and deplatformed and blah, blah, blah. Vaccines don't cause autism, for example. But I ask the question, like, well, what happens if a baby's on antibiotics and gets a vaccine? Has anybody studied that? What happens if a baby's on antibiotics, gets a vaccine, has a reaction, and gets children's Tylenol? What does that do to a baby? Has anybody studied that? And it turns out that two significant factors contributing toward autism is acetaminophen, which is Tylenol, and antibiotics. So when you combine those with vaccines, is that a problem, and why aren't we studying that? Another issue people can't talk about is the whole gender confusion thing. I dive into that a little bit. There are a whole lot of chemicals in our food and in our water that affect the development of fetuses. Atrazine is probably the most well-known. Atrazine in water will make male frogs develop eggs. It affects their development, their sexual development, to such an extent that the males will actually turn into females.
People thought Alex Jones was crazy when he said that whole the water Alex turning the frogs gay.
Talked about the gay frogs, exactly. He was ahead of his time on that. But atrazine is only one of the chemicals. The chlormaquat, there are several of them that have those types of effects on human development. And so my question is, when women who are pregnant are exposed to those chemicals, is it affecting the development of their embryos? Is that being studied at all? You know, because that could be a foundational cause of what turns into gender confusion through childhood or adulthood. Just the exposure to the chemicals that affect the development of your sexual hormones. You know, so I guess what I'm trying to get at in the book is we need to talk about these things. We can't just be told to shut up. You know, we're not going to let you talk about gender confusion or autism or any of the things that the chemical industry doesn't want you to talk about, or Big Pharma doesn't want you to talk about. And they practically own the media because they pay for advertising. And, you know, so this is where we're at. We're at a point where independent media like you, we can discuss, or Alex Jones, you can discuss these things. But on the mainstream media, which I call mainstream propaganda, the boiled frogs never hear any of this stuff.
No, that's for sure. I wanted to ask you kind of a little bit off topic, but maybe not too off topic. This is about direct democracy and electing, putting people in Congress that represent our voice. Would you ever want to suggest getting rid of the Electoral College then and making the presidential election, you know, a popular vote, direct democracy that way? Because there are people on the left that are like, oh, we should get rid of it. It's outdated. It doesn't work anymore. Would you say let's go full direct democracy and just go straight popular vote?
Well, I would say that we start with what we have. We work with what we have. And not make any radical changes right now. We don't have to. Once people control the government, people can make that decision. You know, we the people can study that, look at the pros and cons, and either, choose to eliminate the Electoral College or choose to amend that process. But that's a question that really needs to be studied carefully by we the people, and this decision needs to be made by us putting our heads together. There's a reason that the Founding Fathers established the Electoral College, and for example, if New York City is always Democrat, then the Democrats are always going to win the popular vote. When you have the large cities and the people in the country, you know, like here in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania is a perfect example. We have it's kind of a joke. Pennsylvania has three sections. In the east, we have Philadelphia. In the west, we have Pittsburgh. And everywhere else, we have Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania is where I live. And Pennsylvania's is conservative, you know. It's very conservative. 70%, it's like Wyoming. Where 70% voted for Trump, whereas Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, they're Democrat. So we don't want Pittsburgh and Philadelphia to control the rest of the state. You know, those of us, I live out in the country, I have my own business, and, you know, I own my own property, et cetera. And I, those things need to be protected, and they are. You know, we have a pretty good judicial system where we can go to court to protect our rights if we have to, and that's paid for by tax dollars. not counting your lawyer, but so Electoral College, I think way back then when they established it, they had similar issues of population centers wanting to control the rest of the country when the rest of the country didn't want that to happen. Now, how that becomes morphed into something that makes more sense in the future remains to be seen. But however it happens, it's the people who have to make those decisions, not the representatives.
I wanted to ask you, this is totally separate from the book, but given that, you know, you've been affected by January 6th and the election and all that, you've had a close upfront view. How would you grade the incoming Trump administration and what he plans to do for the next 4 years? Do you think he's living up to what he promised voters so far? Do you think he's going to be successful? Do you think he's sold out in any capacity?
Well, to be candid about this, and I pointed out it, it do point it out in my book, I was a lifelong Democrat. I fought for environmental and social justice, anti-war issues for decades and decades. I formed the Green Party in my county, Venango County, Pennsylvania. Nobody could vote green in this county until I established the party. I abandoned those parties, Democrat and Green. I have nothing to do with them now. They just lost their minds. But the first two times around, I did not vote for Trump. I voted for third parties. This time I voted for, not only did I vote for Trump, I voted straight Republican, something I would never have thought I would ever say in my life. But the Republicans were the only ones through the whole scamdemic that kept their wits about them, mostly. You know, there are you got the rhinos, and you got some of them there who were just as bad as the Democrat. So I think I have high hopes for Trump and Trump's administration. And, you know, Tulsi Gabbard, I've been a big fan of her. She was a Democrat. Elon Musk was a Democrat. Bobby Kennedy was a Democrat. Trump was a Democrat. So, you know, I think that whole dichotomy, Democrat, Republican, conservative, liberal stuff is really harmful, because we all have the same, if we stop and think about it, we all have the same basic values, and we need to focus on what we have in common. The problem I see here with the incoming Trump administration is not the Trump administration, but the same people who have been trying to kill him, to murder him, they're still there. And they will do everything they can to stop him and his administration from getting anywhere. So that's the problem. The good side of that, I guess, is that they expose themselves when they do that, and we can see who they are. So, I have high hopes for Trump and his administration. It's not just Trump, but it's the people he selects. The first time around, he made some dumb mistakes. He picked some stupid people. Well, not stupid people, but people who he never should have selected. Pence, for example, was a really bad choice. Bill Barr, Attorney General. People, you know, but Trump was naive the first time around. He was not a politician. He never had, you know, he's from New York, not Washington, D.C. This time around, though, he's no longer naive. So there's a good chance that he will actually, you know, do the things he says he's going to do. If he doesn't, we're going to be really pissed off.
I hope so.
Those of us who voted for him, we're going to be really pissed off. So I'm a little leery about his stance on the COVID injections. He still hasn't acknowledged the damage that they've done to so many people. And he is a billionaire. And frankly, I have a little bit of trouble trusting people who are ultra wealthy. I'd rather trust you or the guy next door or, you know, the small business owner or somebody like that to make sane decisions. But in this country, in this life, in this world, people like us are never going to get into the position that Trump managed to get into by, you know.
Yeah, it's not meant for regular people. It's for nepo babies and rich people and the well-connected. Yeah.
Right. So hopefully this will allow the country to pivot away from this insanity and start a new direction where the interests of the people are put before the interests of special big business, you know, the billionaires, let's put it like that. So I'm hopeful.
Okay, cool. It'd be nice. We'll wait and see what happens. I think it's going to be a bumpy 4 years. The Democrats are going to put up quite a fight. It's at least going to be entertaining. How about that? I think.
Yeah, and it's a shame. It's a shame that they do that. It's like I say, I bailed out of the Democrat Party when I saw them acting like this. They're just like bought. They're political prostitutes. They're political prostitutes. They're bought and paid for. It's disgusting. It's totally disgusting to me that they represent special interests and not the people in their constituency. You know, so, you know, all the questions you ask about direct democracy and, you know, people keep asking the same questions or similar questions. I'll probably at some point take all those questions and put them into a publication, you know, like a concise summary of like a kind of a playbook on how we move forward with direct democracy. Something you can read, you know, maybe in a sitting or in an hour or something like that. So I really welcome as much constructive criticism as possible regarding this book, Direct Democracy, and I hope to end up putting it in some kind of a publication at some point.
Well, thanks for doing this. I know I took a lot of your time, but I appreciate it. I learned a lot. The book was really interesting. I loved how you put the every left page was the headlines. I could just read those all day long, just the left side of the book, and then start the right side later.
Right. It's infographics from mostly from our current time, because people in the future, they go back and read this book, they can see what was happening in the media. Most of that media was censored, by the way. The boiled frogs never saw it. But those of us who were paying attention saw it. There's 1,300 references in that book, Direct Democracy.
Now that you know where we've been, find out where we're going. Tune in to Ladies Love Politics, where you can stay informed without going insane.